Today's shiur, Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Chof Zayin. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The opening sugya deals with a machlokes between Abaye and Rava concerning an Eid Zomem. At what point do we view the Eid Zomem as being considered posel? Do we say that he is posel from the time that he initially testified his false testimony, or from the point in time that he was revealed as being an Eid Zomem? The nafka mina between these two time periods would be any documents that the Eid Zomem may have signed between the time of his initial testimony and the time that he was exposed as being an Eid Zomem. Using the terms we find in the Gemara, in the Machlokas between Abaye and Rava, Abaye says that an Eid Zomem is rendered posel l'mafreya, meaning from the initial point in time that he offered his testimony. And according to Rava, he is considered posel from the point he was exposed as an Eid Zomem. The nafka mina being any testimony or documents that he may have signed in the interim. Therefore, according to Abaye, any deals that may have been made between the exposing of him as a liar and the initial testimony will be rendered posel, because Abaye holds l'mafreya hu nifsal. He is deemed unfit retroactively back to the point in time that he offered his initial testimony. According to Rava, though, any documents that he signed prior to the time he was exposed as an Eid Zomem are considered legitimate. The first word of today's shiur begins at the very bottom of Chof Vav Amid Beis, Itmar. Eid Zomem, at the top of Chof Zayin Omer Aleph. Abaye Omar, l'mafreyahu nifsal. An Eid Zomem. This represents a group of witnesses, two witnesses that testified about some event in, let us say, for example, in Nisan, and they were exposed in Tishrei, a half year later, concerning the testimony that they offered in Nisan. According to Abaye Omar l'mafreyahu nifsal, he is deemed as unworthy from the point in time he offered his initial testimony. In other words, back to the point of Nisan. V'rova Omar mikan ulahabohu nifsal. He is deemed unfit from the point at which he was huzam, exposed as a liar. The exposure of an Eid Zomem, for those who are not familiar, is a situation where after two witnesses offer their initial testimony concerning an event, two other witnesses come along and say, how can you fellows have testified about a particular event when you were with us at a different location at that very time? And the Torah says that we believe the second witnesses. In fact, the idea of choosing to believe the second over the first is a chidush, is a novel idea. In general, when you have two sets of witnesses clashing with each other, for example, two witnesses say a loan was extended, and the other two witnesses say a loan was not extended, we call that edus b'hakhasha, and we simply ignore the case. However, in a case of Eidim Zomemim, where the second witnesses aren't contradicting the facts, they are questioning the ability of the witnesses to have testified, based on time and place, that you were with us at that time in another place. There, the Chiddush of the Torah is, we believe, the second set of witnesses. Continuing in the Gemara, you notice how we've highlighted the names Abaye and Rava now, as we go on in the Gemara with a double underline. The topic heading that we've offered at the outside margin reads, Aid under Nosei, Aid Zomeim Lemafreya Nifsal O Mikan Labo. Nifsal is he, Lemafreya means retroactive, or Mikan Labo, from this point in time onwards, from the point they were exposed. And we've indicated this is a Machlokes Abaye and Rava, as we read already in the Gemara. We also have a Mivneh heading, that means a structural note. The double underline features the names Abaye and Rava. We'll also notice in the Gemara a diamonded Aleph and Beis, representing two Lashonos. Gemara features an Ikar D'Amri, which you can see in the text, a squiggle underline expression, representing a second approach to the understanding of Rava. And we've noted here, Shnei Ta'amim Lahazbir Shitas Rava, the Mikan Ula Abba Nifsal, two approaches in explaining Rava's approach that states that the Eidim Zomimim are rendered unfit from the point in time that they are exposed, and not retroactively to their initial testimony. We now turn back to the Gemara. Abaye Omar Lemafreyahu Nifsal. Abaye holds that the Eidim Zomimim are considered unfit retroactively to the point in time they offer their initial testimony. And why is that? Me'idna da'asid roshahu. Me'idna, from the time, da'asid, that they testified, he's already considered a rosha. V'atoyra omra, al toshes yodcha im rosha liyois eid chamas. The Torah stated not to place a Rosh, an evil man, as a witness. And the Rosh on that pasuk is as follows, which equals, Al Toshes Rosh, do not place as a witness a Rosh. Rava Omar Mikan Ula Haba Nifsal. Rava says that only from the point in time that he's exposed, that they are exposed as liars, are they rendered unfit. And why is that? Eid Zomeim equals Chidush Hu. More explains why. My chazis de samches ahani smochahani. Why should one rely on the second witnesses, rely on the first ones? And yet we do rely on the second witnesses. And as a result of this aspect of Eidim Zomimim, as opposed to contradictory witnessing that we explained before, Ein l'cho boy elo mishas chidusho ve'elech. Therefore, in characterizing them as unfit, we say this characterization is from the point that they are revealed and onwards only. That's shas chidusho, from the point that they are exposed and onwards. The term chidusho is a reference to the fact that we, as we explained, that they are, that it is a chidush that we rely on the second set of witnesses that did the exposing. Iko diamri, another approach to Rava is, Rava nami ke Abaye svirole, that in principle, Rava agrees with Abaye that we should render them unfit back in time to their initial testimony, in other words, the time they really functioned as Rishoyim, that they lied. Uma tam ko'omar mikanu labo. So why is it that Rava concedes or compromises and says that they are unfit only from the point they're exposed and onwards? Mishum pseida de lekuchos. Because we're concerned with all of the commercial loss that may be involved by all those that relied on these fellows who were subsequently exposed as liars, who may have served as witnesses to documents and sales and contracts in the interim. So as to preserve all of the deals and contracts that they signed before their exposure, we say they are viewed as kosher until the time that they were actually exposed. That's called pseida de lekuchos, to prevent the loss of purchasers or contract arrangements. My binayu, what is the difference between these two approaches that we take in Rava, that we say either Eidim Zomimim is a chidush, or whether we say that our concern is pseida de lekuchos? Iko binayu, the point of difference will be two. One, the asiru beitre bechad, utre bechad, a situation where we don't have two against two, but rather two subsequent witnesses say testimony against one of the two first witnesses, and two other witnesses say testimony concerning the other initial witness. In such a case, we wouldn't view the fact that we render unfit the original pair as a chidush, as a novel idea, because two against one certainly has its own legal strength. Hence, if you were to consider such a situation, we wouldn't classify that as a chidush. However, the concern about retroactive rendering of unfit and its effect on commercial transactions would still be a consideration. Inami de paslinu begazlanusa. Another situation would be where two subsequent witnesses testify concerning the first two that they are thieves. In other words, this is not the fact that we believe the second witnesses is not a function of a chidush. They, the second witnesses, are simply offering independent testimony concerning their behavior or their rishus. In such a case, both of these examples, one and two that we've noted here, there is no element of chidush in the fact that we believe the second witnesses. So, insofar as that's concerned, Rava himself would say that we could render them unfit retroactively. However, there still remains the consideration of Seder de Lekuchos. Therefore, if you accept the second approach to Rava, that which is noted in a Bayes diamond, we would still say, even though there's no chidush, but we will not render them unfit retroactively, simply to preserve all of the contracts that they may have signed in the interim. V'omar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Midifti, Ovad Rav Popi Uvda Kavose de Rava. Rav Yirmiyahu reports that Rav Popi ruled halacha lemaisa in a practical application of this case, like Rava, which means that the Edim Zomimim were rendered unfit only from the point of their exposure onwards and not retroactively to the point in time that they testified initially. Mor Barav Ashi Amar Hilchas HaKavosei de Abaye. And Mor Barav Ashi rules like Abaye V'Hilchas HaKavosei de Abaye V'Ya'al Kigam. This expression, Ya'al Kigam, is really an abbreviation of six different cases in which Abaye and Rava argue, and though in general when Abaye confronts Rava, the Shas paskins like Rava, the Gemara rules like Rava, in six cases we rule like Abaye. We are not going to go through all of the cases in the context of our Shira, but we will note that the Ayin of this abbreviation is a reference to Eid Zomeim of our Sugya. We now embark on a new topic, and that is indicated by the slash mark that you see in your Gemara. The Nosei title on the outside margin is as follows, Mumar Ochel Nevelos, a person who is a sinner in the realm of eating unslaughtered meat, an animal that died or received an improper shechita, an improper slaughtering, is considered an avela, hence forbidden to consume according to Torah law. Let's say we have an individual that eats this kind of meat anyway. What motivates him to eat it? So there are two possibilities. One, lete avon, simply because out of desire. And Rashi explains that since the unslaughtered meat is cheaper, so he's drawn to that simply to save money. So he's willing to compromise halacha, compromise mitzvahs, in order to experience financial gain. There's another character called a mumar ochel levelos, number two, lahachis, out of spite. He's not interested in saving money. That's not what motivates him. What motivates him is to act in a spiteful manner. Ma dinoi lehoid, concerning the lahachis, what is his din with regard to offering testimony? As far as the first category, the mumar ochel levelos leteavon, since he's willing to compromise halacha for the sake of saving money, he is unfit to serve as a witness because of the original pasuk that was cited on this page, which said, "Al toshes yodcho im rosh lios eid chomos," and the Gemara has explained on previous occasions, and we will see that again, that if a person is guilty of financial wrongdoings, he's a thief, etc., he is unfit to serve as a witness because of the feeling that he would also willingly lie in order to earn some money. Hence, we can't rely on such people. So a mumer ochel nevelos leteovon is clearly unfit to serve as a witness. What about a person who eats nevelos for the sake of spite? We will discover in the Gemara this to be a machlokes Abaye and Rava. In our introductory note, we note e boinon davka rosh dechomas. If what the Torah proscribes as being fit, is that limited to people who are careful in finances, or does that mean people who are careful in all mitzvahs? Who is excluded? Is the Rasha de Chomos alone excluded, namely his evil is exhibited in areas of money, or does it go beyond that? Let us open the Gemara. Mumor Oichel Nevelos. Case Aleph, the first example, Lute Avon, Divrei HaKoil Posel. Everyone agrees that he's posel, as we mentioned, because his consumption of nevelos, of unslaughtered meat, is out of a desire to save money. And he's called a Rosh de Mamon. And people like that, we suspect that they would lie in testimony as well in order to make money. Beis, lahachis. What about someone who eats nevelos out of spite? Abai Omar posel, he's unfit. Rova Omar kosher, that he is fit. Abaye Omar Posel, we've emphasized the names Abaye and Rava so that we can focus on the respective shitas. And in this case, we have a double underline with dots in them to distinguish this from the double underlining before, even though it happens to be the same names. The reason for the distinguish is to realize this is a new machlekes. Abaye says, Abai Omar Posel, the Havele Rosha. If he eats Nevelos out of spite, he is evil. Verachmona Omar, Al Toshes Rosha Aid. And the Torah says, do not place as a witness a Rosha. Verov Omar Kosher. Rava claims he, even though his behavior is questionable, nevertheless, he's fit to serve as a witness. Rosha de Chomos Bo'inon. The Torah proscribes only he who is evil in the realm of finances, of money. At this point in the Gemara, we encounter a new geometric form, the triangle, and you notice as you skim down a couple lines, the triangle appears in two different directions. We've indicated in our Mivneh marking, in our Mivneh introduction structural note on the outside margin, the triangle with the point facing up, Kusha al Rava. And with the triangle point facing down, in this case, it will be a Kusha al Abaye. So we open up with a question on Rava. Mesve. You can see a framed section. This is a Tanaic source, as you have been exposed to in our introductory material, that in the marking system we attempt to frame off all Tanaic sources. Al toshes rosha aid. Al toshes chomos aid. The pasuk, as you saw, quoted originally on the upper part of the page, is broken down as having a heading to it, and then two examples. The source says, Elu gazlonim u'moyalin b'shvus. The two examples learned from this pasuk are thieves and those who violate oaths. My lav, in the realm of oath violation, what is included? We have the term shvus in a plural form, so he is said to be a violator of oaths. What kind of oaths? Different kinds. Echad shvuas shav, the echad shvuas mamon. Shvuas shav would be an example of someone who swears a useless type of oath. In other words, he swears, Rashi's example is concerning a pillar made of stone, and he swears that it is made of stone. A useless shvua. It's very important to point out, and Rashi does that in fact, and he says that this does not involve money, a money violation, a financial misconduct, and yet the source calls him as being unfit as a witness. The other example is Echad Shvuas Mamon, people who violate oaths that concern monetary matters. But that already we know is being unfit to serve as a witness. So what do we see from here? We see that the rendering unfit, the passeling of witnesses, is not limited to finances alone. As we see here, even someone who is in violation of Shvuas Shav is unfit. That's a problem for Rava. Rava responds, Loi idi v'idi shvuas mamon. The expression in the source that said moilin v'shvuas are referring to shvuas that are limited to finances. Now, namely, he swears falsely concerning money matters. Umay shvuas, how do you explain the plural expression oaths? Shvuas di'alma. Oaths in general, in as such, since we're referring to the general realm of money-related oaths, so the plural term is used. However, we're not going to include a variety of different types of shvus. Meisvei, the triangle, as we explained before, is flipped over now. Now we ask a kashan abaye. The source says, Al toshes rosha aid, al toshes chomos aid. Two examples are cited in the Pasuk, Elu gazlonim umalve ribios. This is a reference to those who are thieves and those who are willing to loan interest-bearing loans. Interest-taking, as far as the Torah law is concerned, is not acceptable. However, we do not see cited in this source examples that are non-money, and therefore, if he were, let's say, an oichel nevelos lahachis, he would still be acceptable. Tiufta d'abaye, and that is against Abaye. Tiufta, and the Gemara, with this, seems to reject Abaye out hand. Nemo ketanoi. Can we suggest that the machlokes between Abaye and Rava is in fact a machlokes tanoim? When the Gemara presents questions of this nature, Nemo, etc., it essentially is a question. And we've indicated that over here with the circled shin and dashed vertical line indicating the length of this particular question. Before we go on, let's take advantage of our introductory remark concerning this section. Nosei, Nisayon Namid Machlokas Abaye Rova, Ke Machlokas Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yossi. This section represents an attempt to establish the controversy between Abaye and Rova as paralleling an earlier Tanaic controversy. Haim Amrinon, do we say that HaChoshud B'Dovar Kal, that someone who is suspect on a relatively light offense, he posel lahoid afilu benose chamur, that he would be unfit to testify concerning severe topics as well. As we go on in the Gemara, we'll first expose ourselves to the text and then see how this machlokas tanoim ties into Abaye and Rava. Nemo ketanoi, aid zomeim posel l'chol ha'toyro kulo divrei Rabbi Meir. An aid zomeim, a person who is found to be a false witness based on the hazoma process, which we mentioned before, two subsequent witnesses come and say concerning the two first witnesses, how can you testify about whatever you'd said? You were with us at that time at a different place. Once he is exposed as such, he cannot offer testimony in any area. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Bamed Vamamurim, when do we say that an aid zomeim cannot testify? Shehuzam bedine nefoshes, where he was lying about a capital case. In other words, if he was willing to lie about a matter that might cost the defendant's life, and still willing to lie, he is considered choshud for all matters. As using the terminology we find here, that he's choshud on a dover chomor, he is considered choshud on a dover kal. Aval, huzam bedine mominis, if he's found to be lying in the realm of money matters, kosher ledine nefoshos, he's still fit to offer testimony on capital cases. Nemo Abaye kerabi meir. Can we say that Abaye, who rendered unfit the Oichel Nevelos Lahachis, which in our realm of discussion is considered a violator of a light type of offense. Abaye said he cannot offer testimony at all. So that we see Abaye seems to parallel Rabbi Meir, who said that once he's exposed as an aids zomein, he cannot offer testimony, even in severe matters. Namely, even though his offense might have been, or his lying might have been in a light matter, nevertheless, he cannot offer testimony, even in severe matters, where one might have thought that since it's a severe matter, he's not going to lie. Nevertheless, Rabbi Meir renders him unfit. Glancing at the Rashi, Abaye k'Rabbi Meir, Dehainu nami mikulo l'chumra. This too is a case of from light to heavy, where we find him to be unfit in a light matter. This will reflect upon severe matters as well. The Oichel Nevelos equals Ra l'shamayim v'eino Ra l'brios. Abaye's case was one who consumed Nevela, unslaughtered meat. He's considered a sinner with regard to heaven, but not with regard to fellow man. Aval made Sheker b'momon, someone who lies in testimony concerning money matters, equals Ra l'shamayim v'ra l'brios. He is evil heavenwards because he's lying, and he's also evil toward fellow man, willing to see people get ripped off. Sherei mafsidon be'eduso. The kaposil le Abaye mishum nevelos. We find Abaye say that even though he's an offender of nevelos, which is a light matter, he is le'edus mamon. He's unfit to testify concerning the severe matter of mamon. Continuing in the Gemara, Verova Kerabiosi, and Rava, who disagreed with Abaye, would parallel Rabiosi, where we saw Rabiosi say that even though he was in violation of Dine Mominus, he lied in the realm of Dine Mominus, he nevertheless could still testify about the more severe realm of Dine Nefashos. Continuing now, the Gemara offers its explanation. Abaye Kerabi Meir, Abaye, who said that an Oichel Nevelos, which is considered Kal, is by virtue of the fact that he's evil to Shemayim and not evil to fellow man. That's Abaye k'Rabbi Meir d'Amar Amrinon mikula l'chumra. Rabbi Meir also said that once he's found to be unfit in a light realm, he's considered unfit in severe realms as well. V'rova d'Amar k'Rabbi Yossi. And Rava, who said that an Oichel Neveos Lahachis is acceptable as a witness, holds like Rabbi Yossi Domar, Michumra Lekula Amrinan. Rabbi Yossi said that only if he's considered a liar in severe matters, then and only then is he rendered unfit entirely, even for light matters. However, Mikula Lechumra Lo Amrinan. But if he's in violation of light matters, he's not considered unfit with regard to severe matters. Loi. Aliba de Rabbi Yossi Kuleyama lo pliki. The Gemara rejects the attempted parallel we just finished, and rather says that as far as the Tana Rabbi Yossi is concerned, Abaye would not attempt to state his opinion as fitting into Rabbi Yossi's opinion. In other words, according to Abaye, the issue of Oichel Neveos Lahachis being considered posel, li'edus would definitely be a machlokas tanoim, and Abaye never having stated his shita according to Rabbi Yossi. Ki pligi aliba de Rabbi Meir. The machlokas between Abaye and Rava is within the shita of Rabbi Meir. Abaye k'Rabbi Meir. Abaye fits in with Rabbi Meir. As we explained before, we found Abaye holding that from a light matter, namely Achilas Nevelos Lahachis, he is considered posel, entirely unfit to serve as witness. That would fit in with Abaye, with Rabbi Meir, who said that even if one is found to be lying in a, relatively speaking, lighter realm, in a realm of money matters, nevertheless, he cannot testify about a more severe realm, capital cases, either. The Rava. What about Rava? Rava says, my opinion conforms to Rabbi Meir as well. In other words, my opinion that someone who eats nevelos lahachis is still considered kosher as a witness, Rabbi Meir could accept that. Ad kan lo koma Rabbi Meir hosam. Up till this point, Rabbi Meir said his opinion that if he is lying in the realm of, we'll call it relatively light things, like financial matters, that he's considered posel in general. Elo gabi eid zomeim de mamon. Why? Why is Rabbi Meir willing to carry over from a person who's lying in financial matters to be considered unfit even with regard to capital cases? Very simply, because they are of a parallel nature in the following sense. De ra l'shamayim v'ra l'brios. The eid zomeim of mamon, he is evil heavenly and also to fellow man. And as a result of that, he is considered unfit to serve as a witness in any case of witnessing. Not only mamon, but in capital cases as well. Aval hacha, in the case of that I address, namely eating nevelos for spite, the ra l'shamayim v'ein ra l'brios, his evil is exhibited only toward heaven, but not toward fellow man. Loi, he's not considered unfit. Namely, even Rabbi Meir would agree he is not unfit to testify. Rather, he is fit to testify, just like I hold, says Rava. V'hilchisa kavosei d'Abaye. And the Gemara at this point rules like Abaye, that said, a mumer lahachis, a mumer oichel leveos lahachis, is unfit. The Gemara asks, v'ha itoisef. But we found above that Abaye's opinion was rejected. Where did we see that? So here we take advantage of our wonderful marking system, and you see an arrow in the little space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text between the Gemara and the Rashi. Find the parallel arrow, and as you skim up the page, you'll notice a line that followed a Tanaic source, at which point the Gemara said, Tiufta d'Abaye. How in the world then, once Abaye seems to be refuted from a Tanaic source, can we say that we should follow his opinion? The Gemara asks, "Vohi itoisiv? Wasn't he refuted?" The Gemara answers, "Hahi Rabbi Yosi hi. That Tanaic source, though no name appeared in it, happened to be Rabbi Yosi's opinion. Rabbi Yosi's opinion was more tolerant, if you will, in accepting a witness. From that source, we saw that only if he is a liar in financial matters is he unfit." But Oichel Nevelos Lahachis would be acceptable as a witness. That is truly Rabbi Yosi's opinion. But we don't have to follow that opinion. We have Rabbi Meir's opinion. The Gemara asks, but even so, Vitehevei Nami Rabbi Yosi, even if you ascribe that unnamed source to Rabbi Yosi, who stands in opposition to Rabbi Yosi? It was Rabbi Meir, as we saw above. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yosi, Alochik Rabbi Yosi. But as far as rules of psak are concerned, accepted procedures with regard to rendering decisions, we know that in controversies between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yosi, we accept Rabbi Yosi's opinion. So the Gemara answers, Shiny Hossam. The case there is different. In other words, our topic of Eid Zomim and Eichel Nevelos Lahachis, and who would say he is posel and who would say he's kosher, this issue is different. The Sosam Lontana Karebi Meir. We have a source in Tanaic literature that is presented in an unnamed fashion, which reflects Rabbi Meir's opinion that we are machmir, we take the stringent approach to the acceptability of witnesses. Vehecho sosamon, where do we find an unnamed Tanaic source that reflects Rabbi Meir's opinion? We should mention that when you have an unnamed Tanaic source, generally speaking, that is a reflection of Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi's opinion that this is the way to rule. So if we find such a source reflecting Rabbi Meir's opinion, that means that that's the way to go, which of course will serve as a position that, to strengthen Abaye's ruling. We have in front of us now a bracketed section. The Gemara asks, Vehecha Sosam, where do we find such a source? After the bracketed section, the Gemara will start its search after searching after that Stam Mishnah. You'll notice that the bracketed section is rather lengthy, and one can discover its length by following the special vertical dash dotted line that appears to at the side of the Gemara, between the Gemara text in this case and the Rashi. And you'll notice that it continues down the Omid Beis, the next Omid of Gemara, approximately six lines down. And if you follow the scheme of things as our markings presents it, you would have read the question, V'hecha sosamlan, where do we find the Stam Mishnah? And then after the brackets it says, I lemo mehadisnan, if you say it's from the following, and the Gemara will then continue its discussion, searching for a Stam source like Rabbi Meir. That sort, that search itself is featured by a house marking, which indicates a series, and we have a note on the on Omid Beis indicating the purpose of those markings, and we will discuss it then, but we can say right now, we will be going through a couple stages in a search for where is it that we have an unnamed source reflecting Rabbi Meir's opinion. With all that having been said, we can turn to our Gemara and read the Gemara straight through, including the bracketed section. So the Gemara asked, where do we find a Stam source? And as we said, the direct answer to that will come only later. However, as a lead up to that, the Gemara continues, Ki ha de bar chama koto nafsho. Our search for a source supporting Rebbe Meir will be illustrated, or its significance will be heightened by understanding and by learning the following story. This story involves a gentleman named Bar Chama who committed murder. Omar le reish geluso lerev abo bar yankiv. Pok ayin bo. The Reish Gelusa, the exilarch, the head of the Jewish community, says, turns to Rabbi Abba and says, look into this matter, go out and look into this. I vadei kotal, if he committed the murder, lichyu li'enei. This expression is explained by three different explanations found in Rashi. The first explanation will suffice for us. It means, if he is actually guilty of murder, then blind Bar Chama, blind him. And as far as what right do the rabbis have to carry out such punishments, Rashi deals with that issue. We continue, though, in the Gemara. Osu tre sadi, two witnesses came along, asidube devare kotal, and they testify that he definitely committed murder. Ozal ihu, Bar Chama, the defendant, went out, isi tre sadi, he brought two witnesses of his own, Asidu bei b'chad mehanoch. Now these two witnesses offered testimony concerning the quality of one of the two indicting witnesses. Now, the two witnesses that Bar Chama brought in his own defense said as follows. Chad Omar, one of the two said, Kamoi didi gonav kovo dechushlo. In my presence I saw one of the indicting witnesses steal a kav, a measure of chushla, peeled barley. The Chad Omar, the other one of Bar Chama's two witnesses, the other one said, Kamoi didi, gonav kato de burtia. In my presence, he stole the handle of a spear. What, in effect, we have? We have two witnesses agreeing that one of the two original indicting witnesses is a thief. Each one is simply referring to different items that one original indicting witness stole. But nevertheless, we can say that we have two witnesses agreeing that that fellow who's trying to serve as an indicting witness is a thief. At this point, then, we see that Bar Chama is trying to save himself by ruining the group of two witnesses that originally came and said that one of them can't even serve as a witness. Omar le, my daitoch. So it was said in response, what are you trying to accomplish? Kirabi Meir, are you trying to bring defense to yourself by citing an opinion of Rebbe Meir, namely that since they're choshed on mammon, since they're considered thieves, meaning they're evil, a person is considered evil in the realm of finances, he's considered choshed, he would be considered suspect concerning testimony of a capital nature as well, and therefore not be believed to testify against Bar Chama. Nevertheless, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, halachic Rabbi Yossi, when you have a controversy between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, we will follow Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi ha'omar, but we know, and we know Rabbi Yossi to have said, huzam bedinei mominus, kosher ledinei nefoshes, where we find someone to have been found or exposed as improper with regard to finances, he nevertheless is still considered acceptable with regard to capital cases. And therefore, the two original indicting witnesses, even though we may have ruined one of them on in matters of finance, that doesn't ruin him as one able to testify in capital cases. And right now we're dealing with a capital case. Omar Lei Rav Poppy. Rav Poppy interjected on behalf or in defense of Bar Chama. He said, Hani Mili, when is it that we paskin like Rabbi Yossi against Rabbi Meir? Hani hecho delo sosam lontanak Rabbi Meir. That's where we don't have an unnamed source reflecting Rabbi Meir's opinion. Hacha, however, in the realm of testimony, sosam lontanak Rabbi Meir, we have an unnamed source like Rabbi Meir. And the result would be that one who is suspect with regard to mamonos is considered suspect with regard to capital cases as well. And therefore, they would be posel as witnesses, which would get Bar Chama off the hook. Mimai, the Gemara asks, so where do we know this from? Once again, like our original question before the bracketed section, where do we find a Tanaic source reflecting Rebbe Meir's opinion that Choshed B'Mamon would be Choshed also on Nefoshos? E Leimo Mehodisnan, if you say from the following, and as we noted earlier, the Gemara goes through a couple of stages in search. Let us read the note we have in our outside margin. Nosei Mivneh. We have a house marking featured. Shlovim Bechipus. Stages in a search. Lehechasosam Tatanak Rabbi Meir. Where do we find an unnamed source reflecting Rabbi Meir's opinion, that where one is suspect with regard to a relatively light matter, the suspicion carries over even with regard to severe matters. And as a result of having a stam source like Rabbi Meir, the Gemara felt at ease to rule like Abaye, that one who consumes nevelos for out of spite, he too would be unfit to testify. The Gemara continues. E lema mehodistan, if you suggest from the following unnamed source we find a reflection of Abaye, we will find out in a little while that this will not serve as such a source. But let us try to understand the attempt. The source says, "Kol haroi lodun dinei nefashos, roi lodun dinei mamonos." Anyone who is fit to judge capital cases is fit to judge financial cases as well. Money. Who would author such an idea? E lema Rabbi Yossi hi. If you were to suggest that this rule would conform to Rabbi Yossi, ha ika aid zomeim de mamon. We have the example of someone who is found to be lying with regard to money matters. De kosher ledine nefoshos uposo ledine mamonis, whereby he's considered still able to judge nefoshos and poso ledine mamonis. So what do we see? We see that Rabbi Yossi's own opinion would not reflect what it says in the source. The source said anyone who is fit to dan dinei nefashos is fit to dan dinei mominus. That would not conform to Rabbi Yossi's rule. Because we find people that are kosher for dinei nefashos and yet posel the dinei mominus. Elolav. So one must conclude Rabbi Meir he. That we have an unnamed source reflecting Rabbi Meir's approach. The Gemara rejects this. And you'll notice that we've indicated with a long marking, with the Dalet that's encircled indicating Dechia, rejection, and the vertical dashed line indicating the length of this rejection. The Gemara says, Mimai, who is to be so assured that this source reflects Rebbe Meir? Dilma bipsule yuchsin koi. It may very well be that this source is dealing with those who are fit or unfit as a result of problematic genealogical backgrounds. D'i lo tema hochi, if you don't say this approach, then we will run into a difficulty with regard to the Seifa, to the latter section of this source, which says, Seifa dikatani, the latter section says, Yesh ro'i lodun dine mominus, v'ein ro'i lodun dine nefoshos. There are those that are fit for judging financial cases and not fit to judge capital cases. Amai eino ro'i, on what grounds would you suggest that he's not ro'i to dan dine nefoshos? The itzam b'dine nefoshos? In other words, if you don't accept the psul yuchasin approach, you might then go back to the original approach and say that he's unfit to dan dine nefoshos because he was found to be a liar with regard to capital cases. If that would be the explanation, we couldn't make any sense of this source. This is now a quote from the source. Roi lodun dine mominus. You have to read that with a sense of wonderment. Would one be able to possibly say that he's fit for dine mominus? That's not true. Everyone is in agreement that if someone is unfit for a serious matter, he would be unfit for the lighter matter. Ela bipsul yuchasin koi. The source that we learned, the Seifa, must be talking about someone who is posel because of problematic genealogical matters. For example, he is a mamzer, or he is a ger. And Rashi points this out. Ela bipsul yuchasin koi, kagon ger umamzer. These kind of people, dikshirin lodun dine mominus, they are acceptable with regard to judging in financial matters. Upsulin lodun dine nefoshes, they are, however, unacceptable to deal with capital cases, because in the realm of capital cases, Rashi earlier points out that you need a beis din yuchasim. You need people that have a clear genealogical background. And that is learned from the posuk that says, "Betzedek tishpoit." Just like they have to be clean of all wrongdoings, they also have to be clear of any other mum, any other imperfection. That is restricted to the realm of dinei nefoshos. But in dinei momenus, they are able to function. So after having explained the Seifa as Psu Yuchasin, Hochinami, so too with regard to the Reisha, the Psu Yuchasin Koi. It's the Reisha that said anyone who is fit to Dan Dine Nefoshos because he has a clean slate on a genealogical basis, he is certainly able, Roi Lodun Dine Mominus, he's certainly able to judge matters of finance. However, as far as our concern with his rishus level and tzikus level, that is not the topic of that source. Hence, it's not relevant to the discussion at hand concerning a stam source like Rebbe Meir. Ela, notice again we have the house marking. This is the second stage of a search for a stam, an unnamed source like Rebbe Meir. Ela, haha, kososam lantana. But in the following, we have an unnamed source reflecting Rebbe Meir's approach. Disnan. The following source, and before we go further, notice that we have a circled tuf, which is a teretz marking, and a vertical dashed line indicating the length of this answer. The following source, disnan, elu hein hapsulin, hamesachik bekuvia, these are the people that are unfit to judge cases, hamesachik bekuvia, umalve beribis, umafriche yoinim, v'sochare shvias, v'ho avodim. people involved with Masachi Bekufi forms of gambling. Malvi Barib is people who loan money, interest-bearing loans. Mafriche Yoinim, we saw different pshatim, possibly bird races is one of the pshatim, also a form of gambling. And those who conduct commerce, Sochar Eshuiz, commerce with seventh-year agricultural products. Veha Avodim, and slaves. Zeh haklal, kol edus, she'ein ha'isha k'shero la, all forms of testimony that a woman would not be able to function in, af hein ein k'sherin la. So too, the people in this list are not fit to serve as witnesses. Money. Who would the author of this source, this unnamed Tanaic source, be? Ilemo Rabiosi. If you were to suggest it's Rabiosi, it wouldn't fit into his scheme of things. Vo'ika edus bedinei nefashas. Testimony concerning capital cases. She'ein ha'isha k'sherola. A woman is not acceptable to serve as witness in capital cases. And this is all based on scriptural expositions and has nothing to do, of course, with chauvinism or anything of that nature. And yet, v'hein k'sherin ladun, k'sherin la, the people that are featured in this list as being unfit for financial testimony are nevertheless, yes, able to testify, according to Rabbi Yossi, in the realm of capital cases. What we've done with the markings, one might find extremely helpful. The source had a certain nuscha, certain, we can call it, equation. Ein, notice the double, the dashed underline under the expressions ein, she'ein o isha, and then ein, k'sherin la, referring to the list. So the equation in the source was, if not, if woman is unacceptable, then they are unacceptable. According to Rabbi Yossi, I can show you how this source would not conform to his scheme, because taking the realm of capital cases, ein isha k'shera la, and yet they are kosher. So we have, again, dashed underline ein and hein k'sherin la, meaning that the equation presented in the source does not conform to Rabbi Yossi's scheme of things. Elo lav, Rabbi Meir he. But rather, the equation presented in the source would conform to Rabbi Meir's approach. Namely, that one who is choshed in on mominus, just like the fellows mentioned in this list, are choshed also with regard to dine nefoshos. Therefore, taking dine nefoshos as an example, if you were to plug it into this source, we can say, ein ishok sherolah, that is true, and they too, since they are violators of money matters, according to Rabbi Meir, they're also unacceptable with regard to capital cases as well. After all has been said and done, we see from the entire flow of Gemara, Rav Papi, four lines from the top, mentioned that we have a stam source like Rabbi Meir. With that information, we were able to find a point of defense for Bar Chama. Bar Chama was the indicted, was the suspected murderer, but he was able to show how one of the indicting witnesses was a problematic character in the realm of Dine Momenus, and as far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, he's therefore totally unacceptable. And with all of this information processed, we're able to spare Bar Chama. Kom Bar Chama Nashke Akare, Bar Chama arose and kissed his feet, kissed Rav Papi's feet, the Kible the Karge the Kule Shone, and accepted upon himself the tax burden of Rav Papi all of his years. Rashi points out, V'kiblei v'kargei dekulei shonei v'hatziloi kol yomov mimonas ha-melech. Bar Chama was willing to take upon himself the king's taxes that Rav Papi would have been expected to pay. At this point, the Mishnah lists the relatives. We've discussed in the past different types of people that are posel as witnesses. We've mentioned psulim, and we now mention relatives that are unfit to serve as witnesses. V'elu hein hakrovin. We've numbered them off. we're going to see a list of nine initially. Achiv, one's brother, v'achi aviv, his uncle, his father's brother, v'achi imo, ubal achoso, ubal achos aviv, ubal achos imo, ubal imoi, v'chomiv, his father-in-law, v'giso, his brother-in-law, hein, uvnein, v'chasonehen. The people that are listed here, their sons are also unfit to testify concerning me, v'chasonehem, and their sons-in-law. V'chorgoi levado. Chorgo is one's wife's son from another marriage. He is unfit to testify about me. However, levado means, but we do not include the son's wife's son nor son-in-law, unlike the individuals mentioned in the long list above. Om Rabbi Yossi Zu Mishnas Rabbi Akiva. This teaching conforms to Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Aval Mishnah Rishona, the earlier Mishnah would have taught the following. The following are unfit. Dodo, Uben Dodo, his uncle, and his uncle's son, his first cousin. V'chol Horoi Liorsho, and anyone who is in line to inherit. V'chol HaKoroiv Loi Be'oisa Shah, and all those that are related at the time that they are coming to either testify or saw the incident that is the subject of the testimony. Hoya Koroiv Vinisrachik, an individual who had once been related but became unrelated before he saw the incident that will be the subject of testimony, Hareza Kosher. He can serve as a witness. In other words, the fact that once upon a time he had been related doesn't affect his status as acceptable witness on a permanent, everlasting basis. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afilu Mesa Bito Im Yesh Loi Bonim Mimeno Hare Ze Korov. If, let us describe for a moment, one's son-in-law. If the individual's daughter died, that would seemingly create a situation where one is not related any longer to the man that had been married to one's daughter. He is no longer a son-in-law. However, if the daughter bore children with this particular son-in-law, even though one's daughter died, the son-in-law is still considered a relative. Ha'oihev v'hasayne. Oihev ze shushbino. Simple translation, Oev, one with whom he is very fond, extremely friendly. And a sone, one who he is at odds with, hates. Oev, the Mishnah says, Zushushpino, this is a reference to the people that come to create joy and masameach during one's wedding week. So the Mishnah says that during the wedding week, this person cannot serve as testimony for the groom. Sone, what is that? Kol shelo diber imoy shlosha yomim be'eva. Someone who, as a result of some type of strain or strife, remained silent for 3 days. In other words, after 3 days of silent treatment, that would be considered a sone. Omar le, lo nechshedu Yisrael al kach. So, the response to that states that Jews would not be suspect to lie concerning such people. That even though I'm in a state of either ohev or sone, I would not lie about that person under testimony. Let us take a look at Rashi. Lo nechshiv to Yisrael kach lohoid, to testify sheker, lie, mishum eivav yavo, because of either hate or love. V'davka be'edus pligi. This issue concerning ohev and soni as being acceptable or unacceptable, this is only in the realm of witnessing. Avol bedin modu le rabbanan de posu lo lodun. However, as far as serving as a judge is concerned, even the rabbanan who said that they would not lie as witnesses, they can still nevertheless not be accepted as judges. Why? De kevon de soni le, since you're dealing with someone that hates the party, he cannot serve as a judge. He will be unable to seek out merit. And that's an essential element of serving as judge. At this point in the Gemara opens up with a series of markings that draw our attention. And we feature the explanations on the outside margin, the Nosei Mivneh. You'll notice there appear in the upcoming Gemara diamonds and double underlines. These are Mekoros, Lipsule Kurva. We're seeking out sources for those that are considered unfit because of their relationship. We'll see the use of a bow tie at the beginning at the top of the next Omid, featuring the word Ashkechon, which indicates, as far as the Gemara is concerned, that up till now we found X. What about Y? What about Z? And the Gemara will continue in this format. The second topic that will be discussed on this Amud will be not only searching for sources, but also another issue, Misas Bonim Beglal Ovoin Avoisehem, the death of sons because of sins of their fathers. Opening the Gemara, we see we've written in a quote from the Mishnah, Hu Leben Ochiv. Let us be not exactly a quote from the Mishnah, but we're going to be looking for a source that bears out this teaching that's learned from the Mishnah that says, Hu Leben Ochiv, Hu Leach Aviv. A particular person cannot serve as a witness for Ben Ochiv, his brother's son, one's nephew, nor for Achoviv, nor for one's uncle. Mino Hanimili. From where do we see this? Before going further in the Gemara, if you have Daf Chof Ches available, you can skim over to Daf Chof Ches, and you'll notice the Minolon expression repeatedly marked in a diamond. Minolon or Minohani Mili, from where do we know whatever we're trying to establish? So as far as the markings are concerned, the double underline is featuring the point we're trying to establish, and the diamond is the Gemara's attempt to find out the source. So Minohani Mili, from where do we know the issue of nephew, uncle being unable to testify for one another? The Tanu Rabbanan. The source begins with a pasuk, Lo yumsu avois al bonim, and looking at the inside margin, we have an asterisk giving you the continuation of the pasuk, Vuvonim lo yumsu al avois, ish bechet'o yumosu. Continuing in the Gemara, after having cited the opening of the pasuk, Lo yumsu avois al bonim, ma tamud lomar, what is this teaching us? Im lelameit shelo yumsu avos b'avoin bonim u'bonim b'avoin avos, that people do not die as a result of the sins of others, namely a father does not die because of his son's sins, nor do children die as a result of their father's sins. Hare kvar ne'emar, that issue is covered by that which it says separately in the pasuk, ish b'chet'o yumasu, that a person dies only as a result of his own sins. Therefore, what is the meaning of the opening of the pasuk? Elo lo yumsu avois al bonim. What does that mean? Be'edus bonim. That means as a result of the testimony of sons, fathers will not die, being very simply as a result of the fact that sons are unfit to serve as witnesses concerning their fathers. Ubonim lo yumsu al avos, and Bonim lo yumsu, sons will not die as a result of avos, means be edus avos, through the testimony of fathers. We see a bracketed section, and this is explained by the note on the inside margin. Achrei hasugayim, ha-gemora mamshicha b'chipus ha-mekoros. After this, the Gemara will continue its search for sources, lipsulei kurva, for those that are unfit to testify as a result of being relatives. B'soch hasugayim, ha-gemora dona b'nosei im bonim meisim mishum chetei avoisam. Within this bracketed section, which will carry us to the end of today's shiur, we'll discuss the issue of individuals dying because of the sins of others. But in order to preserve the general flow, let us just skip over for a moment to the continuation of the Gemara to get a flavor of what's going to happen. After we cited this Tanaic source before the bracketed section, the Gemara will then say, Ashkechon avois lebonim ubonim leavos, which means that we, by learning this source, we will have discovered that an uncle cannot testify against or for his nephew, nor nephews for uncles. And the Gemara will say, the kol shekein avos lahadodi. And certainly, avos is a really refers to two brothers who are considered the children, the fathers of the subsequent generations, and certainly they cannot testify for one regarding one another. It's important to note, therefore, that even though the literal reading of the psukim was lo yumsu avos abonim, it's not a reference to father testifying concerning son. Rashi explains this a little bit more at the lower part of the page, three lines from the very bottom. Lo yumsu, shnei avos be'edus b'nehem, two fathers as a result of the testimony of their children. What does that mean? The two fathers referred to here are a reference to two brothers, namely, can use as an example, Reuven and Shimon. Shehein Kroivin min hakol. They are considered closest in terms of relationship. Because as far as the simple translation value, that you cannot say is the point of the pasuk, namely, to suggest that we're talking about father and son. For example, Avraham and Yitzchak. That could not be the pshat. The im kein lohavi kori lehu avos. If that were the intent of this pasuk, it wouldn't have used the word father in the plural. Dechad av dechad ben sagi. It would have stated that in the singular, a father cannot testify regarding his son. As a result of the fact that these words appear in the plural, lo yumsu avos al bonim, we're not talking about father for son, but rather two fathers regarding their two sons, and really crossing the lines, namely the son of one cannot testify regarding the father of the other, namely a nephew cannot testify concerning his uncle. As we mentioned, the continuation of this will be found at the top of Chof Ches Amar Aleph. In the meantime, though, the bracketed section deals with the idea of dying because of the sins of others. Before we go on, we notice at the beginning of the bracketed section, whose length is illustrated by the vertical dash dotted line to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara, we notice also triangles. These are explained in the outside margin under the heading of Mivne. These are questions, kushyot, al hod yaminen di ein bonim meisim ba'avon avoseim, questioning the theory that children do not die because of the sins of their fathers. Continuing now in the Gemara, ubonim ba'avon avos lo, is that so that children, because of their father's sins, do not die? V'hoksiv poked avon avos albonim, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu remembers or visits the sins of fathers on the sons. So the Gemara answers that is true, but under restrictive circumstances. That is when children follow in the evil ways of their fathers. Kedesanya, the following source, bears this out. V'af ba'avoinois avoisom itom imoku. That they will be held accountable to their father's sins. That is, kishoichsi ma'asei avoiseim b'idehem. When they maintain the practices of their evil fathers. You say that that's limited to the case that the sons are evil like their fathers, or maybe it's even in a case when they are not evil, namely the sons are fine, only the fathers were evil. Kishu Omer, when the Pasuk says Ish bechet o yumasu, that a person dies only because of his own sins, Hare kisha oichsin maaseh avoseim b'yadehem. Therefore we have to understand the Pasuk in Vayikra Chavav, Pasuk Lamites, as referring to a case where the children are following and continuing the evil ways. When they do so, they are held accountable also for their father's evil behavior. The Gemara asks, "Velo, is that so that a son does not die because of his father's sins?" Valksiv, the choshlu ish be'achiv, that a person will stumble because of his brother. Ish be'avon achiv, that because of one's brother's sins, I am held accountable. Malamit shekulam areivim zebozeh. We see from here that everyone is considered responsible for the other, that even though I'm not committing the sin, if my friend committed the sin, I'm held responsible. The Gemara says that is true under certain circumstances. That is true when the bystander had the ability to protest and remained silent. But otherwise, if one did protest and the party violated the mitzvah anyway, the protester is not held accountable. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.